Mad as hell in America. Now on 620 KPOJ.
Yo!
On the books now that characterize who might be a terrorist. Someone missing fingers on their hands is a suspect, according to the Department of Justice. Someone who has guns, someone who has ammunition that is weatherproofed, someone who has more than 7 days of food in their house can be considered a potential terrorist. If you are suspected by these activities, do you want to have the government have the ability to send you to Guantanamo Bay for indefinite detention? A suspect. We're not talking about someone who has been tried and found guilty. We're talking about someone suspected of activities.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman, and I am in search of a slogan. You were listening to Rand Paul, who happens to be on the right side of history on this one, unlike our once respected Senator Carl Levin from Michigan. I never thought that I'd be on the same side of an issue with Rand Paul, but I'm glad he's getting up there and speaking out against it, along with the FBI and a whole lot of other people who know that this is wrong. And of all things, Ron White. I can't even figure that one out. I'm still trying to figure that one out. Let's go to calls. We got a full board. Jim in Portland, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. What's up, Jim?
I got an idea for you.
All right. For what?
For a slogan.
All right. I got my pen, man.
All right. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America, where anger turns to action.
Ooh, I like that. Anger turns to action. I might put this on the website and let's vote on it. Where anger turns to action. I like that, Jim.
I like the alliteration of America, anger, action.
Yeah.
It flows pretty good.
Jim, thanks very much, man. I like it a lot. I really appreciate it.
All right, good luck.
All right, man. Thank you. So Jim answered my question, which was, I am in search of a slogan for the show. And if I end up using yours, like I said, I don't know, I'll buy you a sandwich. We'll go out to lunch. We'll talk. We'll chat. I'll coffee. I'm pretty fired up. I'm saying I don't know where we go from here, but I no longer have any faith in the Democratic Party as any kind of salvation. I mean, it's not like I've been on the fence for this, but this National Defense Authorization Act, this Ron Wyden hooking up with having a friends with benefits relationship with Paul Ryan, this is the Carl Levin leading the charge to strip Americans of their fundamental civil liberties and neutralizing the Bill of Rights. Did you know that Harry Truman voted against a very similar bill during the McCarthy era, saying this would make a mockery of our Bill of Rights? And then it went back into the Senate and the House, and they voted for it and passed it anyway. And that's when people were being pulled into court for their beliefs. Better watch out, man. All right, let's go to Kurt in Beaverton. Kurt, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. What's up, Kurt? What are you mad as hell about?
Well, I can't be mad because it's a sunny Saturday afternoon in Portland.
I know it's hard.
Wonderful. Jim had a really good slogan there. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. Where anger turns to action. Good.
Regarding Ron Wyden, I called, I don't know if it's his sanity, his ethics, or his naivete into question back in 2004 when I was at an Ed Schultz show in Powell City of Books, downtown Portland.
Uh-huh.
And that being an election year, he was bragging up about Oregon vote by mail, which I do think is a good thing. But then he said, I would like to see us vote online with the internet for all of our elections. And the entire room just went, no!
That's a crazy idea. That's madness.
I thought he was going to get run out of town. And to be, whether he's that naive or that stupid, either way, it's dangerous to have someone like him in Washington.
I agree. And I just, because it's not trustworthy. Because at one moment, he's willing to take a really bold stand against PIPA, right? Which is a very, very toxic bill. He said he's gonna filibuster it the old fashioned way, the old Mr. Smith goes to Washington Way. He's going to stand on the Senate floor and talk and read off the names of supporters. And he voted. He was one of only seven votes to vote against the National Defense Authorization Act. So who is this guy? You know, one thing, if you do look at his voting record, he always votes with the money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true.
I don't know who he is, but we got a Jeff Merkley. I think we can get another Jeff Merkley and get Ron Wyden out of there, because regardless of his intentions, he's either too stupid or too naive and too dangerous. He needs to go.
I agree, Kurt. I agree. He's got to go. When we come back, more of your calls. Thanks for the call, Kurt. 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Are you still down with the Democratic Party? Are you going to vote for this president? What are we going to do? You have a slogan for me. 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Need a little help on this. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. We'll be right back.
Hell in America. Now on 620 KPOJ.
We want a liberated land, supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. And that is still my new favorite band, Junkyard Empire. Song is called We Want. You can check them out at junkyardempire.com. They're on iTunes. These guys got it going on. I think they are the next great band. They're the next rage. Junkyard Empire. All right, so we are talking about the madness that has become our political system, but it's beyond just broken. It's out of its mind. It's schizophrenic. We've got guys like Ron Wyden making partnerships with guys like Paul Ryan to destroy Medicare. Come on, man. What is going on here? It's just the whole thing's got to go. So I've been talking about how does it go? This is not a, you know, the last revolution that this country really had was at its founding. And I don't think we can even envision what it would look like on the other side. I can't. But we've got to, because we can't do this anymore. This is madness. This is not a time for incremental change. This is a time for radical change. Let's go to calls. Margie, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. Margie, what's up?
I wanted to call about Ron Wyden.
All right.
I happened to catch your... Of course, I love you, and I love your dad, too.
Oh, thank you. He's still around.
I'm very pleased to see you on a talk show. Anyway, I have voted for Ron Wyden ever since that man took office. And I didn't used to pay enough attention to politics, but I paid good attention to it for 10 years. And I want you to know, Ron Wyden, that you will not get my vote.
Good.
I am livid. I am livid. I cannot believe that he would pack up with Paul Ryan, of all people, to help them demolish our country even more.
Yeah, and there's no benefit. I don't understand the benefit. All it does is undermine our messaging in 2012. Not that I'm a huge supporter of this party anymore, but
right.
I mean, it hurts Democrats. I mean, we were going to go out there and say, you know, this is a Republican party that wants to dismantle Social Security, wants to dismantle Medicare.
Right.
And now we've got a Democrat leading the charge. It's madness. Margie,
and he's one that's supposed to be a liberal.
Yeah, no, and he is. It's just like, I don't know. It makes people crazy. Like I said, they're just all narcissistic lunatics who without a compass.
They're all waiting for their payday after they're kicked out. Well, you know what, Ron? Your payday's coming. I hope you're happy with it, because you have made me sick, and I am so sad.
I would say that you're mad as hell, Margie.
I am mad as hell.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Don in Albany. Don, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. Don.
Good afternoon. First of all, please send my regards to your dad.
I will.
And second, it's all sounding like Joe McCarthy running the Salem witch trials, isn't it?
It sure does.
And I have a question for you.
All right.
Aren't arrogance and paranoia basically different sides of the same coin?
How do you mean, Don?
Well, you know how they seem so similar to each other.
Arrogance and paranoia?
Yeah.
Well, I think that that's an interesting topic of conversation. Arrogance and paranoia, I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but I...
Well, like Herod the Great and all those figures of in ancient time, you know, they basically considered themselves gods and all that, plus they were always afraid of somebody trying to take their place and all that.
Well,
that kind of thing, yeah.
Well, I think that there's... Thanks for the call, Don. I do appreciate it. I do think that there's something to this idea that if you are untrustworthy, then you are deceitful, then that's how you perceive the world. Everyone else is not to be trusted if you yourself are not trustworthy. Let's go to Shoddy. Do I have it right? Shoddy in Portland?
Shoddy.
Welcome to Mad as Hell in America, Shoddy. What are you mad as hell about?
Well, I was looking up Medicare Part D on the internet, on Wikipedia, and they talk about the voting that took place for that. So originally Ron Wyden voted against it, and it was
right
the part where they had the donut hole and they couldn't negotiate with companies for how much it costs for medications.
Right. They weren't allowed to collectively bargain for medications. That was outlawed by the Bush administration.
Right. And so somebody started talking around to get the senators to change their vote. And so Ron Wyden was one of the key people who changed the vote at like 3 a.m. They voted again and passed it.
Was his a decisive vote?
I'm not sure. One of three, I think.
Well, right. Like but this guy's out there. He's the guy, the Gray Panther guy. He's the advocate for the elderly and seniors in this country. And for him to come out against something like Medicare, something that is so critical to the well-being of our seniors in this country, to partner with somebody like Paul Ryan to dismantle it, the blowback on this is going to hurt him forever. Forever. Thanks for the call, Charlie. I appreciate it. Let's go to Gary in Pennsylvania. Gary, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call all the way from outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Well, thanks for listening from all the way outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Well, obviously, a few observations, if I may, and a quote from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. First, voting may not be enough anymore.
Right.
But voting may not be enough. We must get more active. I think that's at the bottom line of your show, frankly.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Secondly,
go on.
Secondly, the simple word that's been so prevalent now, I've been on this word for a long time, it seems like forever at age 66, that greed continues to be, in my opinion, at the core of America's declining democracy.
It is.
So in view of that, if I may, I'd like to quote Franklin Delano Roosevelt. We've been through this before, obviously, as you know.
Yes.
But I contend this is, I think it's worse this time because I think the culture is worse than the 30s, frankly. So it's like a double down. So the quote is this from Franklin Roosevelt, if I may. Franklin Delano Roosevelt said simply this: we have earned the hatred of entrenched greed. And that's where America is again today.
It's true, and we're going to be talking a little bit about this. I mean, this is in the second hour, Charles Derber is going to be here. He's the author of a tremendous book called Marx's Ghost. And it's an invented conversation with Karl Marx, who tried to kind of set up a system that mitigated against the tendency for human greed to overtake political systems. Certainly capitalism is a system that engenders greed, right, and engenders self-interest and places those things, this notion of private good, over everything else, And so we're going to talk about Marx in the second hour and try to devilify him, if that's at all possible. Gary, thanks so much for listening. I do appreciate it. We're going to take a break and come back with your calls. In a minute. No, we're not going to take a break. I'm lying. I was just kidding. I was testing. Let's go to Derek in Vancouver. Derek, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
Hey, Adam. I just wanted to kind of talk about, you know, when you turn on CNN, you know, the first commercial you see when they go to break is a commercial from, like, an oil company or, you know, the Petroleum Institute.
Right.
You know, or any other, you know, multinational corporation. And I think that's the main problem, is that not only are they influencing the media, they're influencing, you know, the senators that get elected on both sides of the board. I mean,
well, let me ask you a question, because I asked myself this question. Why do you see that, like ads for the United Arab Emirates or for Conoco? They're not selling any particular product. So the question is, what are they doing on CNN? What are they doing advertising on Meet the Press? I think I have an answer, but I want to get it from you. Why do you think they advertise like that?
Honestly, I think, I mean, you know, the main thing you see is like a family, you know, at a picnic or something, and, you know, there's really green grass, you know, and they're in nature. You know, I think that they're just trying to be a part of the mainstream. You know, I think they're trying to paint this image that they're doing good, you know, and I almost cracked up when I saw the new BP commercial about, I don't know if you've seen the new, there's like a tourism commercial, like for the Gulf, you know.
Come on down. It's all okay now. The dispersions took care of it all. You know what, Derek? I'm going to challenge people out there. The number is 503-248-0620. 1-866-452-0620. Derek, I think that there is a more nefarious motive behind why they advertise on the shows. And I want to get people to call in. Why do you think that you see these kind of very broad, and I do appreciate the call, Derek, why do you think you see these very broad commercials that they're not selling anything specific, right? They're not selling a toothpaste, a deodorant, but they're these very kind of just, we want you to feel good about Conoco. And I think it goes beyond just top of mind, just propaganda. I think there is a very specific reason that they buy time on those shows. And I'm wondering if anybody out there wants to take a crack at it. 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Why do we see all these bogus propaganda ads on our political shows every Sunday or on CNN or even on Rachel Maddow? Why? The answer is very important to understand. There is a strategy in place. I think I have the answer. I want to hear it from you. Let's go to Virginia. Welcome, Virginia. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You're on with Adam Klugman. What's up?
Well, one of my favorite sayings for your motto is, don't agonize, organize.
Oh, that's good. I like that. Okay. Don't agonize, organize. Good deal.
I want to talk about Ron Wyden, but first I want to say something about the advertising. They refer to that kind of advertising as institutional advertising.
Okay.
Where you're doing sort of, you know, cosmetic work for an industry or an entity as opposed to selling a specific product.
Right.
Now, I think a lot of the advertising I've seen lately by these people is geared towards convincing the American people that fracking is safe.
Sure.
Okay. Or that all these other things they're doing are fine. They were required by the settlement by the feds to promote Gulf tourism because they destroyed it. So that's where those ads came from.
Right.
But underlying that is the notion that they have to maintain a certain income stream to these media conglomerates in order to have the clout they want when they need it. Okay? So even if they've got nothing specific to sell today, they're going to place institutional advertising so that they're providing 15% or 25% of the advertising revenue for certain programs so that they can call whoever's in charge and say, hey, what was that story you just ran, and who's the guy who ran it? Because I don't ever want to see his face again. You know?
I think you're on to something there, Virginia.
I think that's a big piece of it. Let me say about Ron Wyden, and it's interesting you've got a Marxist on today to talk, because I think the problem with Wyden and a lot of other people in Washington is they don't have a comprehensive worldview. They have no philosophy. Everything is case by case. Nothing is connected to anything else. Wyden casts a lot of really good votes.
Yes, he does.
And then turns around and casts a bunch of really crappy votes.
Yes.
You couldn't have an integrated worldview or some sort of notion of whose side you're on and vote that way.
I think that's a good point. No, I guess that's
so.
A... So, or maybe, wait, or maybe this, Virginia, maybe you're, you do, I think Ron Wyden is somebody who has a fairly well-integrated liberal view on the world, but that liberal view gets disintegrated when your own self-interest trumps that worldview.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, when you're a public servant, you're supposed to be a servant. What's your own personal interest have to do with it?
Yeah, but he is clearly a career politician who has a formidable political machine. Who, you know, one friend of mine said, I think he's looking to run for president in 2016. I'm like, not with this move, he won't.
No.
Well, Virginia, thanks for the call. I'm going to move on. I appreciate it. That's the music. When we come back, we have your calls. 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Stay with us in the second hour. We're going to have Charles Derber, author of a book called Marx's Ghost. It is an imagined conversation with Karl Marx that is reflecting off the surface of all that is happening today. This is a truly brilliant man who's going to take us through the ABCs all the way to the Zs of Karl Marx. We're going to get a lesson. We're going to get schooled. We're going to have a conversation with you, not at you, in the second hour when we come back.
Isn't it? This is Mad as Hell in America. Portland's Progressive Talk, 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. And I'm still in search of a slogan. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's smart talk station. We're going to go right to calls. Let's go to Jack in West Lynn. That's my home. Jack, what's up?
Yeah, hey, you got a lot of nerve, Klugman.
Okay.
Yeah, coming on the radio and shooting your mouth off about Wyden without giving the other side a fair chance to hear what they have to say. I mean, what does Wyden have to say about this bill?
I don't know. Did you listen?
You don't know, do you? So you don't
I do.
Know.
I actually do.
Oh, well, you just said you don't know.
No, I do know.
Oh, all right.
Did you listen? Carl Wolfson interviewed him yesterday morning, and he had absolutely nothing substantive to say except tell us that we don't have the facts right on this, but he didn't represent what those facts are, nor did he tell anyone that we were going to be saving any money with this. So,
well, I hear a lot of summary conclusions here on your part, but I'm still not hearing what it is that he has to say about this bill.
He has nothing substantive to say. You can go.
Well, I could just easily say that about you. I could say Adam Klugman has nothing substantive to say.
Oh,
you could.
Let me ask you this, Jack.
Let the listeners, the audience here, make up their own minds about what he has to say.
What do you have to say, Jack?
What do you know about it?
So then why are you calling?
I want to know what he has to say.
Why don't you call Ron Wyden and ask him? Because I asked him to try to come on the show. I reached out to him. He never got back to me.
Oh. Well, how about one of his people?
And no one got back to me.
Well, can you do that maybe for your next show?
I will try, Jack. But what I will, next time, please call, and you have something to say about the Wyden bill. I mean,
well,
learn about it yourself.
I mean, what, I can't ask a question without you trying to pry an answer out of me?
It would be nice if you had an answer.
Well, I don't pretend to have all the answers like
so,
some
so
people
what,
do.
I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm saying that this bill is bad, and this bill dismantles Medicare, and here's why it dismantles Medicare, is because what it does is provide a voucher system and throws seniors out into the marketplace.
Oh, come on.
It does. Jack, do me a favor. Get educated and then call me back and we'll have a real debate.
Adam,
you don't have any facts, brother. I'm sorry. I'm done. He has no facts. Just attack. He doesn't know anything about the bill, so I'm not even going to bother. Let's move on. Don in Salem. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
Hi, Adam. How you doing?
I'm all right. That guy got me all fired up, but, you know.
Yeah, I think his facts aren't quite there yet.
He doesn't have any facts. He just wants to spout off. But that's
I'm not too freaked out about the Wyden thing because I think this may be part of the ultimate trap to set up single payer. But I could be wrong.
How would it be a trap to set up single payer?
I mean,
Medicare is the only single payer system we have.
At this point, it's only a white paper, and I think that it may be part of the path. But I could be wrong.
Well, if anyway, it is, I'd love to know.
I called about why oil companies and electric companies and all those guys advertise.
Okay.
And they are selling something. They're selling stock. And what they're doing is selling a perception to their shareholders that everything's hunky-dory.
Well, here's my answer, and I appreciate the call, Don. My answer is Virginia had it right. They buy ads so that they can dictate the terms of the conversation. So that if something that they don't like gets on the show, they can say, we don't want you to talk about that. And if you do, we're going to pull our advertising dollars. So it's like a drug addict mentality. They get you hooked on the revenue, and then they can pull it away. And that's why they do it. That's the strategy. Let's go to Jeff in Portland. Jeff, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
Hey, thanks, Adam. Thanks, as always. I just want to say we got to keep an eye on Obama when it comes to the Keystone Pipeline. You know, in 2 months, he's going to decide. He said he was going to veto this bill, and he didn't. And so now he's got 2 months. And I think that's a line in the sand if he crosses that and allows the pipeline. But speaking of the banks, we have too big to fail banks. We've got a military-industrial complex that's too big to even question. We have a Federal Reserve that's too big to even know what they're doing until years after they've done it. The bank bailout was $700 billion by Paulson and Bush, but the Fed at the same time put out $16 trillion of our money to banks and corporations all over the world. So when you add this with the systematic erosion of our civil liberties, I think even Tom Hartman, who hates libertarians, has to start questioning all this and say, is it time for us to start pushing for a Ron Paul versus Barack Obama showdown in 2012? If we get Paul as a candidate, maybe even a third party candidate, then we can decide if Obama's going to offer, if he's offering us enough of an upside with the economy and the environment, or is it time to punt the ball to Ron Paul and let Occupy Wall Street and the progressives go on the attack for poor people, working class people, the middle class, and the environment?
It's a good question, Jeff. I don't know the answer. I don't know. There's a lot of things about Ron Paul that bother me. Before we go to the big break, let's go to Patty in Beaverton. Patty, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Adam?
I'm all right. What's up, Patty?
I was just listening to you talking to a caller that was give me a hard time about Ron Wyden.
Yeah.
And you can tell the caller that if he wants to know what Ron Wyden has to say about it, all he has to do is go to his website.
Oh, there's this whole PDF. Yeah. There's this whole PDF there that offers absolutely no substance at all.
It offered nothing.
Yeah,
there was nothing in there to explain anything. All he said is, you haven't read the material again and again and again.
I know. And neither, you know, first of all, I have read the material, but he hasn't. So he doesn't know. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Karl Marx. Yeah, we're talking about replacing the system. Let's see what Karl Marx has to say about capitalism when we get back.
Now, coming to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.
You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
Online at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcome back to the second hour of Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's smart talk station. And we had a very lively first hour. It was a lot of fun. I got somebody who I made somebody mad as hell. That's good. Don't just agree with me. Let's get it going. Let's get it fired up. Jack, call me back. Go ahead. Learn about the Wyden bill. And then call me back and let's have a more rational discussion. Or, you know, you can scream and yell if you want. We can scream and yell at each other. That's okay, too. But you get your facts and then you call me and tell me why I'm wrong. We have a few calls and then we're going to go to what I consider a very, very special guest on our show. We're going to have an informative, excellent, hopefully enlightened conversation with a gentleman named Charles Derber, who has written a book called Marx's Ghost. It's an imagined conversation with Karl Marx that is informative and enlightening and entertaining. If you want to know more about Karl Marx, this is the book. His name is Charles Durber, and the book is called Marx's Ghost. You can get it online at Amazon, and we're going to get to him in a minute, but people have been holding over the break, so we're going to take a couple of calls. Laura in Vancouver, welcome to Mattis Hell in America, Laura.
I love you, Adam. I've got a motto for you.
All right.
Taking no more.
Taking,
that's your motto. Taking no more.
Taking no more. Okay, we're writing it down right now. Taking no more. Laura, thanks very much. I appreciate it. Like I said, if we go with it, we'll go grab a sandwich. Let's go to Vilma. Vilma, welcome to Mattis Hell in America. What's up, Vilma?
Hey, I have a comment about Ron Wyden.
Okay.
I think your new, as far as I'm concerned, your new motto can be, Ron Wyden is deceptive, deceitful, and his position on this Medicare issue is wrong, wrong, wrong.
I agree with you. I like I've said on the show, to be fair to Ron Wyden, he takes a lot of really important, bold, brave, unpopular stands. That's why this is so mystifying to me. And I think he's just dead wrong on it. Thanks so much for the call, Vilma. I appreciate it. Okay, so we are going to move on. I want to tell you about my next guest. His name is Charles Durber, and he is professor of sociology at Boston College and former director of its program on social economy and social justice. Charles Durber has written 15 books reviewed in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, and other leading media. His books, which include Corporation Nation, The Wilding of America, Greed to Green, and now Marx's Ghost, have been translated into five languages and focus on capitalism, corporate power, globalization, climate change, militarism, economic democracy, and social movements, including the Occupy movement. He has also written for the International Herald Tribune, the Boston Globe, Newsday, Tikkun, and many other periodicals. Durber is a lifelong activist who is active in peace, environmental, labor, and other social justice movements, including Occupy. Mattis Hell in America is moving up in the world with this next guest. Charles Durber, welcome to Mattis Hell in America.
Hey, Adam. Nice to talk to you again.
It's nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Like
it's
I said,
pleasure.
You're classing up the joint.
I think you got a pretty classy joint already there, Adam.
All right. Well, thanks very much. So I want to just tell you a little bit and let our listeners know that a little bit about how this conversation and why I invited you to come on the show. So what happened a couple of weeks ago, I had said that I had given this kind of very new age, airy-fairy, almost apolitical speech that many people like. But one of our regular callers, whose name was Sean, called in, and he's a regular listener, who called in and said, hey, man, I hated that monologue. I don't know what you're talking about. Get real, man. Why don't you talk about something like Karl Marx? And then I said, okay, yeah, I'm open to that. And then about a week and a half passed by, and a friend of mine called me up and said, hey, I just read this great book, having not known anything about the conversation on the air. I said, I read this great book called Marx's Ghost by this guy, Charles Durber. You just have to read this. This is like the best, most thorough introduction to Karl Marx you could ever get. And it's just thoroughly entertaining. And I said, well, can I borrow the book? And so I borrowed it from him, took a look, and I said, oh, my God, this is perfect. This was a kismet. So Charles Durber is here, author of Marx's Ghost, to help us kind of understand who Karl Marx was, what his theories on capitalism were, and how they are relevant to the condition that we are in today, and how Marx predicted a lot of the conditions that we are seeing in our capitalist society today. But before we even go on with that, tell us a little bit about your book, Charles. Set it up for us, because the setup is really interesting.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it, Adam. As you know, I spend a fair amount of time in Europe, and I was in London with a friend, I, for the first time, found my way on one of those big red double buses going up to a place called Highgate Cemetery, which is where a lot of famous British and European intellectuals are buried. And the reason I did that was that I knew that Marx was buried there. I had read a lot of Marx in the 1960s when I was in college, and I felt like a need to make a pilgrimage because the 2008 collapse had just happened, and it was becoming very clear that something was deeply wrong with the economy, and it was structural, and it was, you know, something that was not going to be remedied by the normal politics that pass for Democratic politics in this country. I mean, Democratic with a small d. So I just felt like I wanted to go back. It was not really a nostalgia trip, but a feeling that there was something there lying in the ground that had something to tell me. And actually, I just got there. It's a very beautiful place. You have to pay out a pound or so, which is about $2.50 to get into this place. But it's gorgeous. And I went down the lane that the woman who was sort of taking money at the cemetery asked for. And then went down this beautiful lane on a very sunny day. London does have sunny days. And ended up in front of this very imposing tombstone, which was Karl Marx's tombstone, great big marble sort of slab with his head on top and a couple of his most famous sayings, inscribed on the tomb. And I just took a seat and sort of let myself get into a reverie, enjoying the afternoon and sort of recalling all of my intellectual and political encounters with various forms of Marxist thinking, leftist thinking, progressive thinking that drew on Marx's ideas. And then it just seemed as if sort of a conversation spontaneously emerged, and I'm not really much of a believer in ghosts, but something was happening there, and I just decided to be open. And if your readers are open enough, I'm sure many of you are no more believers in ghosts than I am, but I had a very instructive night. I'd stayed a long time sitting in front of his tomb, and what transpired is in that book, which is the conversation between me and Marx's ghost.
Our guest is Charles Derber. He's a professor of sociology at Boston College and author of a book called Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. And one of the great things about the book is that it is very animated. It could almost be a play. It is truly a dialogue, but I think you've done a very good job also of representing Marx's own words. So interspersed throughout the book and in the margins are things that Marx actually said. So it isn't just a matter of interpretation. We talked a little bit about this. So let's start at the beginning so we have time, because there's lots of ground I want to cover. So Charles Derber, just for people who don't know, I always like to start at the beginning because I think there's big gap. Who was Karl Marx and what is his sociological significance?
Okay. Well, Marx was born in 1818 in Prussia in a town called Trier. He came from a family of rabbis, but his father, who converted from Judaism, was a merchant. He's from a well-educated, assimilated German family, Prussian family, and he went to school in the 1830s and sort of came of age intellectually when people like Hegel, the great philosopher, idealist philosopher, were in vogue. Maybe more important, and this is interesting, Adam, that as we move into the 1840s, as Marx begins to mature as a young man, the historical context was kind of similar to what we're beginning to experience today. I mean, particularly we're seeing it in the United States in the Occupy movement, but in, we're seeing much of the book looks at alternative economic and political changes that are not very widely discussed in the United States because we live in this kind of intellectual bubble that reflects things that are going on around the world. And these are little, ferments and eruptions of democratic, economically democratic alternatives that were happening also, interestingly, in the 1840s. As you might remember from some early class that in the 1840s, there were literally scores of revolutions breaking out across Europe. So when Marx was in his most formative political stage in his 20s, he was experiencing a kind of wild set of political explosions, starting in France, but spreading through Germany and Prussia and around much of Eastern Center Britain and so forth. And this reflected a lot of, I mean, culminating in the revolutions of 1848, which had a little bit of the feeling of the Arab Spring. I've been interested in this. And in the sense that in the most unlikely places, you began to see eruptions of democratic outbursts. I mean, it was reflecting a lot of different things. Very early stages of capitalism were, you know, sending a lot of people off the land as corporate agriculture began to take root and people were displaced into the city, large numbers of slums that people like Charles Dickens were writing about in London. I should say that Marx, who had been, who got a PhD in philosophy, was quickly banned because he had, as he developed intellectually, he got into a group of very progressive, Hegelian, post-Hegelian thinkers who were shifting. Hegel had believed in a kind of dialectic of the spirit, meaning he saw a series of sort of, you know, theses, antitheses, new syntheses, which were driven by ideas. And Marx is known to sort of turn Hegel on his head, meaning that he saw the same kind of dialectic, meaning, and this is one of the really important valuable ideas of Marx, both for people interested in politics and just in life, that contradictions sort of are the engine of life and of society. And he believed that these revolutionary outbursts, the sort of European Spring that he was seeing back in the 1840s,
right,
was a reflection of these contradictions that were developing in many different European societies as capitalism began to take root, as large numbers, as it sort of was on the one hand enormously productive, and Marx saw capitalism as a very revolutionary and dynamic development, but at the same time saw it as beginning to create the, you know, the instruments of terrible repression, poverty, inequality, class division, and so forth.
A lot of what we're seeing now,
lot of exactly what the Occupy movement is,
right,
is seeing and reacting to.
Charles Gerber, I need to take a break here, but when we come back, I want to get a little more deeply into Karl Marx's thoughts, talk a little bit about dialectic materialism, which was kind of a cornerstone or became a cornerstone of his thoughts. Talk a little bit about his two most famous works and see if we can't summarize the essence of his thought, particularly as they relate to capitalism. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. Our guest is Charles Gerber, author of Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. This is Mad as Hell in America. I'm Adam Klugman. We'll be right back with Charles Gerber.
Come on! Mad as Hell in America. Now on 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's Smart Talk Station. Our guest is Charles Gerber. He is professor of sociology at Boston College and author of a book called Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. We are getting schooled in who Karl Marx was and how his philosophies and are relevant to capitalism and the kinds of effects, negative effects of capitalism that we are seeing today. Charles Gerber, welcome back to Mad as Hell in America.
Thanks, Adam.
So let's get in a little bit to, we left the conversation saying that Karl Marx was seeing a lot of capitalism was really kind of taking off and he was seeing the enormous power of it, but he was also seeing the negative implications of it. So let's talk a little bit about his works, what the central ideology, if we can encapsulate it, was, particularly in the two books that are most famous, which are The Communist Manifesto and Capital.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just say first something I said to you, Adam, when we talked before the interview. Marx is, a dirty four-letter word in the United States, and this has strong ideological functions in the way that political conversation develops in the United States. I'll put it very simple, and Marx's Ghost sort of said to me right at the beginning of our conversation, Tina, which is an acronym. I thought he was talking about women. And I knew he had married an aristocrat named Jenny von Westphal, and I couldn't think of other women named Tina. And then I realized that he was referring to an act that Tina, T-I-N-A, was an acronym, which meant there is no alternative. And what he was telling me, and he was very agitated. I guess ghosts can get agitated. And he was agitated and kind of mad as hell because what he was realizing was that people... One of the aspects of capitalism that is most powerful is its systems of ideological control. Yes. In other words, it shapes the way people think, what is really acceptable forms of conversation and thinking in the United States, particularly in churches, universities, workplaces, and so forth. And at the heart of it, Marx was a theorist of capitalism as a system. He wanted it was taking form, and the amazing thing is that 160 or so years ago, he was able to foresee, despite many, many mistakes that he made, I think the core things that were driving capitalism and why it would drive itself ultimately into the ground, and the enormous injustices and frightening crises that it would, bring on the world. And this notion that I think even much of the left has accepted. You have to tell me whether your audience is in this category, but it's very hard to believe in any alternative to capitalism in the United States. As right. I said, there are parts of the rest of the world where we see indigenous societies, a lot of, and I spend a lot of time in the book to try to talk about alternative things, whether they're very cooperativistic and local or worker-owned, based on worker-owned, self-managed companies or other forms of economically democratic alternative. But, for the mainstream, even probably for many of the people in the Occupy movement, it's simply not possible because the vocabulary, the sort of frames of thinking that would let people imagine that of an alternative to capitalism is possible, has been suppressed. And it's largely because I think the tool for that has been the demonization of Marx. And there, I think, of course, Marxism was used in ways in the Soviet Union and China that led it to be demonized. And I can understand why many people who have not been deeply schooled in this, and most Americans haven't, would simply think of Marxism as a system of gulag authoritarianism or something like that.
But, right. I think that makes sense for people. We've seen governments and societies based on Marxist thought just utterly fail at so many levels, not only to provide for the people, but to provide any kind of basic civil liberties that you and I are so accustomed to in this country. So it seems to be a failed system.
Big theme. And as you know from looking at the book, that I'm a very skeptical interrogator of Marx's ghost.
Yes.
And I challenge him. And this probably is the most important of all themes, that is the sort of quasi or sometimes brutally authoritarian strands of Marxist thinking. He's known for his phrase, the dictatorship of the proletariat, and so forth. People associated him with Stalin or, the most repressive forms of Maoism and so forth. And so the book really goes into some detail, because while Marx can be held to account for some of this, what I try to show in the book is that this, despite mistakes in his terminology and so forth, the fundamental core of his thinking was about the authoritarian, repressive characteristics of capitalism itself. He understood that capitalism would become a monopolistic system, that huge monopolistic companies would come to operate on global scales, would come to take over whole governments and whole societies, would come to control not only the economic system, but the political system and the ideology and cultural system, and would fundamentally drum out any real freedom or sort of self-determination, individuality, really, in the system. I mean, it's not widely understood that Marx's first great books was something called the Economic Manuscripts of 1844, where, as a philosopher, he was writing about alienation of people from themselves. And he really was sort of a social psychologist and theologian, in a sense, sort of writing about what was fundamentally human and how a capitalist economic system would sort of tear the guts out of people's basic humanity and would strip away and I don't want to sort of get you harangued by your audience who thinks you're airy fairy in the last show or something. But Marx had a concern with the human spirit.
Yes.
I think some of his powers to recognize that the economic system is completely integrated with the political and cultural system, and that one of the great repressions of capitalism is of the human spirit. So I just want to sort of preface that and also say that in demonizing Marx, we've essentially shut down the human imagination in many ways. I mean, it's become a primary tool for preventing people from sort of simply letting their imagination run free and thinking about ways, really believing that the economy can be changed. And when you see something like the Occupy movement, you take heart because you realize that there are a lot of people so disenchanted with the way things are that they are hungry to learn about alternatives. But, you know, the occupation movement has been taken to account because it seems so diffuse and seems to lack specific intellectual and policy goals. And I think that is, you know, that it reflects the fact that these young people who are at the heart, as well as many of the unions and other, you know, important institutions that have become part of the movement, have been deprived of one of the most important systems of thinking about capitalism itself. I mean, most people go through college with never, I mean, I teach at Boston College. I have very good undergraduates. Most of them have never taken a course on capitalism. They've never thought about system control, the idea of changing a system in a very fundamental way. So to look at Marx is to sort of liberate the imagination. Even if you're not a Marxist, and remember, Marx himself said, "I am not a Marxist." So
right, nor was Christ a Christian.
Yeah.
In that same spirit,
exactly.
Our guest is Charles Durber, author of Marx's Ghost: Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit specifically about his predictions about capitalism and how we are living through a lot of those predictions. And I also have some calls on the board for you, Professor. You're listening to Mad as Hell at America. I'm Adam Klugman. We'll be right back.
Hell in America with Adam Klugman, now on Portland's Progressive Talk, 620 KPOJ.
The love of the other that uncovers a new discovery of reconstructed humanity, where rebellion is love and love is the rebel who will never settle for what she is told and sold. That road called freedom, seldom traveled by the multitude, where we are all wise and intelligent. We do the elegant dance of resilient skeletons with radical visions towards a new way of being, where rebellion is perpetual because it is love, where love is the assertion of our full humanity.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's smart talk station. We are talking this entire hour about Karl Marx, about failed economic systems, in particular his predictions about capitalism. We're learning about who he was, what he believed, and how we are living through some of those predictions. Our guest is Charles Durber. He is professor of sociology at Boston College and author of the book Marx's Ghost: Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. If you want a thorough and beautiful and entertaining introduction to Karl Marx, read Marx's Ghost: Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. Professor Durber, welcome back to Mad as Hell in America.
Thank you so much, Adam.
I'm going to go to calls here. I'm going to go to Sean. Sean is the caller who said, "Hey, man, why don't you talk about Marx?" So let's go to Sean's call. He's been holding a while. Sean, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. This is all your fault. You're on with Charles Durber.
Adam, thanks so much for doing the show. Professor Durber, you know, as someone who self-identifies as a Marxist, one of the things you run into all the time is the statement, "Oh, it's been tried before. You know, it's been tried and it doesn't work." But as anyone who's read Marx knows, Marx predicted that socialism and communism would emerge from capitalism. Both China and Russia tried to leapfrog an entire stage of economic development. They tried to go from feudal societies with very small proletariat and jump all the way towards socialism. And that's what gave rise to the whole forced industrialization problem. And a lot of the brutality and the dictatorial stuff, that was because America actually invaded the Soviet Union just after the revolution, and they had to defend themselves, so they had to go through a period of forced industrialization to do so.
Hmm. That's an interesting point. Charles Durber, you want to take a crack at that? This idea that societies that have failed based on Marxism leapfrogged over capitalism and went into the state of kind of forced industrialism. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, Sean is getting at one of the contradictions in Marxism, one of the hardest things to deal with, because, you know, was the Soviet Union in fact a reflection of Marx's deepest values and thinking, or for example, China in its most repressive forms? I really don't think so. I mean, they really appropriated the ideology of Marxism, used a lot of the language and so forth. But I think if you look at the overall body of Marx's work, it wasn't just because it didn't, you know, Marx thought, as Sean said, that post-capitalist progressive society would emerge out of the most developed forms of capitalism, not out of pre-capitalist type societies. So you could say, yeah, they just didn't fit, you know, the sort of historical, Marx's historical view of how a progressive post-capitalist society would emerge. But I think also that these societies, which were, you know, I mean, if we're talking about Stalinism or Maoism in its most repressive phases and so forth, they really did not reflect Marx's thinking in many ways. I mean, Marx, like I say, was really believed in individual freedom. He really believed that capitalism was lethal because it essentially expropriated from people their ability to control their own lives. And neither the Soviet Union nor China, in their most, quote, Marxist embodiments, gave people any capacity, really, to develop themselves. I mean,
but Professor Derber, I was wondering, would you concede, however, though, that many of the things Americans and Western Europeans take for granted, unemployment insurance, 40-hour work week, all that sort of thing, none of that would have ever come into existence without the existence of the Soviet Union. And the reason we're stuck with Margaret Thatcher and her there-is-no-alternative stuff is that since the fall of the Soviet Union, now austerity is the order of the day because they no longer have to compete for the heart and soul of the working classes of the world. Now they're going to roll back all of the gains because there's no countervailing force. And the Soviet Union is gone now.
Yeah, well, I think there's some truth to that, but I think, you know, the bigger problem is that the sort of monopoly capitalist Wall Street, the kind of 1% that the Occupy movement has, you know, been seriously internally, that is in the Western cultures, eliminating countervailing systems. I spent much of my life writing about labor unions, government countervailing capacities, popular movements, and so forth. And what we've seen in the last 30 years, but, you know, for longer periods than that, is a systemic effort in the West, where capitalism has taken root more strongly, to simply eradicate countervailing power and to entrench very authoritarian. You know, one of the core ideas of Marx is that democracy is an ideology. It's a myth because, and the whole idea of free market is a myth because capitalism is based on a form of statism. One of Marx's most important insights is that once you have a 1% controlling the great wealth of the society, there can't be a democracy. I mean, you get a monolith of very wealthy elites tied in with political elites so tightly that it becomes a kind of unbreakable system of power that acts in the name of procedural democracy. You get elections, but you don't get substantive democracy. That is, you don't get outputs from the government that are for the 99%. You're going to get out, you know, the government acting to serve that 1% that actually controls the government. This is the absolute, in my view, center. That's why Marx is a political economist. He understood that the economy, when you centralize control of property and wealth in a society, you have blown away the prospects for any real democracy.
That's right, and people should stop saying that the system is broken. Capitalism is actually working better. Capitalism is creating more profits for the capitalists.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. The power of the 1% is something that's wired into the... I mean, the usefulness of Marx is to understand that this enormous concentration of wealth that we're seeing and the enormous, you know, sort of DNA wiring of economic and political power is a core of capitalism. You know, this I emphasize just because people think that, well, capitalism is a free market society, meaning that the economy and the political system are separated, and we can have democracy in the political system and sort of a more hierarchical economy. Marx understood that this was not possible, that if you allowed the economy to become extremely authoritarian and hierarchical, as evidenced by the, you know, the way we structure corporations and allow a tiny 1% elite to run the economic show, both on Wall Street and to a large degree on Main Street, then you can't possibly have a democratic society. You'll have all the trappings of democracy, and you'll have societies that bask in the glow of exceptionalism and, you know, all these wonderful values of liberty that are associated with democracy, but you get exactly the opposite. And Adam, I think it was you who said, yeah, this is the way capitalism is supposed to work.
No, that was Sean, and I
think. Oh, that was Sean.
I'm somebody who says the system is broken a lot. So.
Professor Derber, one last quick thing.
Yeah, and then I got to move on to other calls.
Okay, the Joe the Plumber phenomenon. There's nothing more tragic to me than people, the whole entrepreneurial mythology, the E-Trade babies, everyone's going to grow up to be their own little capitalist. Can you talk about Marxism as a form of intellectual self-defense?
Sean, thanks for the call, too. I appreciate it.
Well, Sean is an insightful reader of capitalism. Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
And the other thing beyond the political control, that economic control best, is ideological control. When I talk to students about, you know, these ideas, what seems to resonate most with them, and I can understand why, given the bubble phenomenon that I mentioned, that Americans kind of live in this. Remember the movie about the bubble boy who simply can't see outside? He lives his life in a bubble. You know, this is, again, something that Marx predicted, that the way people would think about the world would be shaped by the structure of the economy, and that the people who control the economy would spend a great deal of their time fashioning the way people think about the world, because it's too expensive to have to run capitalism by guns. So capitalism spends a lot of time legitimating itself through ideas and invests enormous resources in educational institutions, in what appear to be free media but are actually corporate media, in what appear to be, and they have enough semblance of freedom that they're not dismissed as easily as they were in places like the Soviet Union, where everybody knew that this was propaganda. But you have a kind of mass propaganda system that Marx saw, again, as the core of capitalism. And that is, this is the triumph of capitalism, to essentially prevent people from breaking out of the molds of thinking that are consistent with the survival of capitalism itself. And that's why I was saying that even on the left, and even in the Occupy movement, I think large parts of the Occupy movement, not all, the idea that there is some systemic alternative to capitalism, that we can really reconstruct a democratic economy, a self-managed economy, has, you know, there's no intellectual foundation in the country for building those ideas. And that's why I think the Occupy movement which has been brilliant in sort of articulating the devastating consequences of the kind of capitalism we have, has been unable to clearly articulate what it's looking for, because those ideas have been drummed out of the vocabulary of the country. Now, without leaving people too hopeless about this, I wrote an article about some polling that had been done that showed that among young people today, and this was in a Pew poll and reproduced in Gallup and a number of other polls, if you ask people today, particularly people between 18 and 34, do you have a positive association with the word capitalism? And then you ask them if they have a positive association with the word socialism. It turns out that as many young people have as positive association with the word socialism as capitalism. In other words, despite all of the ideological control, the depth of the alienation that this system has created is getting people looking to something that is more humane and more democratic.
Our guest is Charles Derber, author of the book Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. If you want to know more about Marx, if you want a great introduction to Marx, if you want to deepen your understanding of Marx and have an entertaining read, this is the book. We have two calls on the board. We're going to take them in the next segment. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm Adam Klugman, and we'll be right back.
Guard stands around the door.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ. In this hour, we are talking about Karl Marx. We are talking about Marxism, communism, and the system of capitalism under which we live. Sean, most recently, our caller, said that actually people need to stop saying that the system is broken. Rather, capitalism is working just fine. Thank you very much. Our guest is Charles Derber, author of the book Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. It is a sensational read and a very thorough introduction to Karl Marx and very accessible. I strongly encourage all of my listeners to read it. Charles Derber, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Adam.
I want to move on to some calls. I had somebody who's holding quite a while.
Sure.
Larry in Berkeley, California. Thanks for holding. Welcome to Mad as Hell. You're on with Charles Derber.
Thank you. Hi. Professor Derber, there were some articles written by some professors in the 70s, Michael Reich from Berkeley and David Finkelhor. There was also another article by Stephen Heimer, who apparently died in the 70s. He was a professor at the New School for Social Research. And what these articles talked about was how important that capitalism needs to have a strong military industrial complex in order to keep it itself going and keep itself afloat. And I wanted to, and Dr. Heimer also wrote an article about the multinational corporation, how he saw it coming to be. And I wanted to know why we need to have this military industrial complex in order to keep capitalism going. And then secondly, I wanted to ask, as a person with a disability who lives on disability insurance, how is it that I can make common cause and try to organize my people, given the people with disabilities, given the fact that the middle class in this country has been so immiserated by this process that's been going on the last 30 or 40 years?
Great call. Great question, Larry.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. You want to take a crack at it?
Yes. Thank you very much for bringing that up. First of all, I just want to acknowledge that Marx argued that capitalism was going to create catastrophic crises, not just in the economy, but in the war system and in the environment and the climate system. And it's very interesting. When I went back and looked more carefully at some of these things, you're absolutely right that militarism was seen as central to capitalism, and Marx saw it all coming 150 years ago, partly for obvious reasons. He realized that capitalism was an expansionary system and it was a very dynamic system, but it required taking control of every bit of resource and land and labor market that it could get hold of cheaply, and the military was the instrument for that kind of conquest. So Marx anticipated hegemony on the part of leading capitalist powers because he saw it as you suggested, built into the DNA of capitalism. If you couldn't expand and acquire, you know, essentially control over planetary resources and planetary states, capitalism would quickly shrink. I just want to also mention that the second crisis that you didn't mention, but it's sort of a, because it's also an existential crisis, like you know, warfare, you know, nuclearized or biological and chemical warfare today. The climate crisis is something that's deeply embedded in the writing of both Marx and Engels, I mean, his lifelong co-author and co-thinker. And they wrote a lot about the corporatization of food and agriculture, the depletion of the soil, that sort of monocropping kind of, that they were able to foresee. It's quite remarkable that Marx and Engels both had such a strong sort of premonition. Engels once wrote that the greatest alienation that capitalism brought, other than the alienation of human being from himself, was from nature. And this sort of so I just want to point out that Marx was very cognizant of the connection between capitalism and these kind of two great existential crises that we're facing.
We're going to go to break, and I'd like to hold this over. We have a long break coming up, and I have two calls on the board.
Okay.
One from David in New York, one from Joe. But in the, we have a couple of minutes left. So take us through very specifically. I mean, Karl Marx made very specific predictions about how, and Sean alluded to it, about the stages, about how capitalism would go from socialism and then to communism. What were his predictions, and what do you think are the most salient predictions and relevant predictions that we're seeing come about today?
Well, just to pick up the second point of your caller, because I don't want to, it's so important. I think one way, I don't mean to be flip about this, but he saw that the great mass capitalism was going to disable, essentially create disability in spiritual, economic, and political terms in the great majority of the population, because it concentrated control over property in a tiny fraction, what we call today the 1% of the population. He thought that that disablement of the mass of the population would create terminal capitalist crises, would create the kinds of deep recessions that we saw in 2008. Those were, I mean, he said something very interesting. He said, the financial system makes crises possible, but it's rooted in something deeper. And that deeper was the alienation and disablement, the lack of any what Sean called countervailing power of the masses of people. So that the understanding that capitalism was going toward increasingly deep and intractable and catastrophic crises is the most important understanding that Marx offered.
Our guest is Charles Derber. He's author of Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on a Changing World. We are discussing Karl Marx. Professor Derber, can you stay over one more second?
Absolutely.
Into the break? I really want to get to these calls.
I'm happy to do so.
You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm Adam Klugman. This is AM 620 KPOJ. We're going to extend this conversation into the next hour in the first segment, but then we're going to have someone from the Progressive Party who is running for office to bat us home on Mad as Hell in America when we come back. That's right now.